I watched a documentary today called about Chungyeom Rinpoche.
Okay.
Have you seen it? It's called Crazy Wisdom.
Oh, Chungyeom Rinpoche.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to say his name.
Yeah.
He like an yes. interesting character.
He was an interesting character. He appeared. He appeared on the scene. You know, at an opportune time in Western culture, going through its own catharsis and discovery process. And so, though he was an indulgent, you know, toxic narcissist from hell, he was a lot of fun, and people were not so sensitive or educated with respect to the possibility of, you know, crazy personalities like his. And so, you know, rather than discard him, which might have been a good idea, he was, you know, venerated and celebrated as a proponent of crazy wisdom. You know, so he created, you know, a cult around himself because of his charisma and the uniqueness of his message being kind of Tibetan-esque in Western vernacular. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that got started. And I'm sure, you know, being around him was a total buzz. I never had the privilege.
Mm. Yeah, he had some, like, paramilitary things.
He had a, you know, a Scientology kind of orientation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think the organization was nearly as paranoid and toxically incarcerating as Scientology turns out to be.
He was pretty out in the open with all his...
Yes, he was. To his credit, he was out in the open. And so people that, you know, you could say played with him under a full disclosure.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know if his antics, would fly in, today's culture, whether he would be celebrated in quite the same way in today's culture.
Probably not. Yeah.
Came on the scene, you know, at a naive turning point as the youth of the, you know, late 60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got turned on by Ram Dass and Trungpa and other, you know, celebrity gurus, right? No.
Mm.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he's still kind of venerated today by the people that knew him, met him, or, you know, studied with him. I think other people may have been, you know, ultimately turned off by the insatiable indulgences of his alcoholism and womanizing and...
Mm.
Other ways that he could say he took advantage of people under the rubric of crazy wisdom.
Yeah, it seems like things, you can spin anything in any direction.
You can. This does.
And does. And
yeah, it can and does. You know, you could have a really quiet, sacred movement of contemplative discovery, and you can have, you know, Scientology, right? You can have profound revelation popping up in the middle of nowhere, and you can be surrounded by, you know, cults as bizarre as Dafri John.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you could have profound evidence for global warming and the retreat of glaciers and snow cap and alarming reduction in water supplies and still have avid climate deniers. I mean, it's surreal, isn't it? I mean, really, the entirety of culture, regardless of whether it's Western, Eastern, Asian, African, or wherever, is surreal. It's bananas. There is no, I don't know, there is no truth. There is no consensus reality.
No, there's not.
There's just not. And, you know, and if we, part of our, part of our journey in terms of recovering from the confusion of childhood in the West or elsewhere is to try to find some kind of parenting that is, I don't know, reliable. Mm-hmm. Because our own parenting was not reliable. It was painful and confusing and strangled by narcissistic intent. And so, you know, we bite, we cut, we addict, we engage in all kinds of curious and quasi-harming, you know, interpersonal relationships, right?
We find gurus.
We do. Yeah. We find, you know, gurus and cults and people to pay obeisance to in the hopes of kind of parenting ourselves. But it turns out that most of what we find turns out to be, you know, sorely insufficient to the task.
Yeah.
And so many of the gurus, regardless of gender or culture, are more than happy to take absolute advantage of the aspirants that seek them out.
Yeah, do they facilitate the freedom you're looking for, or do they infantilize a person? Seems like it could be both.
Everything happens.
Yeah.
Everything happens. That's, you know, it's part of the surreal nature of humans engaging with humans under false pretenses, which is all we really have.
That's all we have.
All we have is false pretense. And so where do we think we're going to find something that's genuine and true? I guess the best you can do, and maybe my hat's off to Choyim Trungpa for that purpose, is the best we can do. Let's just lay it out with full disclosure.
Yeah. It's harder to take issue when it's fully disclosed. You know?
It is. Of course it is. You know, I mean, Amrit Desai did not consent to full disclosure until it was too late.
Yeah, because then there's a big betrayal. I mean.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But the betrayal is there at the very get-go.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess that's part of the process of getting over a profound naivete of attempting to reparent. Mm-hmm. We're not going to reparent. It's not going to fucking happen.
Probably not.
It's just not. Whatever brick walls we may have hit in those formative years of, you know, early childhood development are simply not going to be replaced. But that doesn't mean we can't commit ourselves to a course of maturity or recovery. It just means we're not going to find substitutes for the deranged parenting that we had. Mm-hmm. So if I go to Kripalu or Muktananda, or I go to, you know, what's her name? The Buddhist gal up in Nova Scotia somewhere.
Pema Chodron.
Yeah, if I go to Pema Chodron, you know, wherever I go, what am I doing? In a way, I think I'm trying to be spiritual or somehow recover from suffering. But really, what I'm up to is some kind of reparenting, and I don't know it. Mm-hmm. I'm not hip to it. And
some
so,
misguided attempt to reparent.
Yes, it's a misguided attempt to reparent. Most spirituality. Most corporatism, right? Most politics, most churches and social engagement venues are misguided attempts to reparent. And look at the social fabric. I mean, it's pretty clear. You know, And then, you know, and in the culture, we have, you know, millions of celebrities according to various entertainment, fields of entertainment, right? So everyone in sports is a celebrity in the field of, you know, sports competition. Everyone in music is a celebrity in the field of, you know, creative stimulation and excitation. Everyone in the guru business is another, you know, form of entertainment when it comes to exotic mind states, or perhaps, you know, some demonstration of miracle, and a false sense of security through this Byzantine approach for self-parenting. And underneath all the things that are, say, socially acceptable, we have gobs and gobs of shadow, right? Whether that's, you know, expressed through addiction or sexuality or various kinds of incarceration or groupieism of a thousand kinds, right? Political expedience, corporatocracy. You know, so poof, knock yourself out. In the midst of that, which could be a, you know, a major letdown. It could be a major letdown to catch a glimpse of just how failed our attempt for reparenting is going to turn out, and how much disappointment we're going to have when it comes to our encounters with the institutions that we hope will assist us in healing. I mean, all the bodywork stuff that I, you know, that I've done and participated in were mini cults of, you know, the celebrities gifted in the art of, you know, touch. Right, the art of somatic intervention, but they all became, you know, cults of celebrity, and that's not so much the cult leader's fault. You could say it's an organic symbiosis of the charismatic and the naivete with which the seeker pedestals the charismatic.
Mm.
So it is kind of symbiotic. It's hard. It's nearly impossible to avoid.
Pretty much.
Unless you know have a I don't know. Unless you're clear enough to I don't know, deal with it, work with it, out it, right? Attempt to nourish a relationship or a cooperative form of discovery that is not about creating celebrity and dependency. You know, I mean, a character like Shinzen, you could say he's kind of safe from it because he's such a, you know, he's such a goober. And around a goober, you know, an endearing goober, of course, and around an endearing goober, it's hard to get much mileage out of projection and transference.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he kind of is protected from that by being the way that he is. Yeah. And I think that... taking an academic approach to things, which he tends to do, he hides behind a certain, you know, academic approach. And that also...
I heard he gets tricky with it in a sweat lodge, so...
Mm-hmm. He what?
He gets pretty freaky when he goes into, like, Lakota Sioux sweat lodges, you know. He really goes for it, I heard.
Oh, nice. So he starts screaming, Ho Mataquiasin and all my relations or something?
Something like that, yeah.
He gets high on Mother, Father, Bear. Yeah. 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 Well, you look at the young Bentinho Massaro, you know, and within a short period of time, you know, he has created an institution, right, around himself, whether it's, you know, a kind of an open ashram or benefactors or you know, talks and eruditions that he has really no business making. You know, it's like turn. It's just somehow disappointing to convert the sacred agenda or sacred appetite for reality into an institution where people end up, you know, having to pay to self-dignify.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like very tricky that you enter into a mercantile relationship with someone, offering them teachings, firsthand experience, correspondence, you know, stuff like that. But how do you really assist someone in self-dignifying if you're in a business relationship with them? Or how do you help them to self-dignify if you're in a carnal relationship with them or a dependency relationship, right?
Things get muddled.
Yeah, how long does it take? You know, 3 seconds? Because we're all wearing our damaged hearts on our sleeves. And so things get muddled, you know, before they even begin.
Yeah, his wife was saying, what's his name? Chung-Yum? I can't say his name, but...
Yeah, right.
Chung-King.
Chung-King, right.
Like, they had been married, and he slept with somebody else, and she cried and said, are we going to have to, you know, get a divorce now? And he said, look, we're never going to have a conventional marriage, you know. But I'll be
okay.
There for
it. Okay, whatever that means, you know.
Whatever that means.
Yeah. I mean, we're humans, which means we are madly expert at justifying and condoning anything.
Yeah.
And if you're in a relationship with a charismatic, you either submit to their reality or if you have the gumption, you bail out and, you know, seek relationships that are more suitable to your karma. And a lot of times, you know, the charismatic has a quality of magnetism that makes it difficult, though perhaps not deliberately, but makes it difficult for the partner or the aspirant or the devotee to flee. I mean, institutions like Scientology or Ekankar, and the list goes on and on, make it extraordinarily difficult to leave the church. It's like you've been incarcerated against your will for life. I mean, the Catholic Church lets you go. All they do is pepper you with 1,000 envelopes so that you can help, you know, give them money. But it's not like they come to your house and videotape you like the Scientologists will.
No. Mm-mm.
They won't encroach upon your privacy, besides maybe a friendly phone call once in a while or sending you more mail than you can deal with.
They don't tape your confessions.
And that's right. The Catholic Church does not record your confession and then use it against you to, you know, make sure that your homosexual tendencies, you know, don't become public. But blackmail is just another way that human beings relate to each other, right? I mean, in that you know, documentary, right? L. Ron Hubbard threatened his, you know, wife, but kidnapped their child, right? Did things that should have earned him a seat in jail, which he, you know, successfully avoided. And the things that David Miscavige is allegedly doing, documented by many, believed by few, is also worthy of a jail sentence. But if you're, you know, if you've got a church and you're 501c3 religious and you're conducting yourself in a violent way amongst, let's say, quasi-consenting adults, then it's hard for the society to take you down. But if you're just a black guy, you know, with a taillight out, you could end up dead. I mean, where's the justice? How many times did Chris Rock get stopped by white police officers, you know, in a week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, Richard Pryor did a whole bit on that, how you'd have to behave if you got pulled over, like that white guys were like, oh, hello, officer. Oh, yeah, thanks for doing your job.
Right.
That was a little different if you were a black man.
Yeah. That's right.
But you know what? There probably are no consenting adults in the case that you mentioned.
Which case? We were gossiping about 1,000 things.
Oh, just about when you mentioned the tax write-off that churches get and how
people will
go along with the weirdest things.
Yeah, that's right. And why should we think that entering into a spiritual dialogue or a spiritual partnership or studying under, you know, let's say an accomplished meditator or a meditation teacher should be any different?
Yeah, I think there's kind of like a hypocrisy in the organizational structure of what happens when you have this like hierarchical structure between the leader or the teacher and the people who seem to be interested in what this guy or girl is saying. And I don't know. Most religions try to teach as one of their tenets equanimity, and at the same time, the structure that they're setting up is polarizing in a way where it in itself isn't equanimous. So,
yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, equanimity is defined by the people that have the most guns. You know, I mean, go to any Buddhist center and, you know, challenge the established authorities with respect to what equanimity is, and you'll find exactly what equanimity is, you know, faster than you can find your silly ass being booted out. You know, so equanimity is defined by the people that hold the principal influence over the institution or the minds and loyalties of the people that are participating in the institution.
Well, I think some of those people think that equanimity means keep calm and carry on.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Kabbalah people would say equanimity means go to the next house and extort more money. That's equanimity. Yeah. If the folks at 492, you know, Mulholland Drive won't give you any money, well, Jesus, go to 495. Get some money from them. Yep. But we, you know, we even try to extract equanimity from our own mind. And now that's a real dumb fuck move. We're trying to find a harmonious relationship, a non-harming relationship with our own mind. And I don't think anyone has ever found an equanimous or nonviolent relationship with their own mind.
Well, I constantly find myself in a self-deprecating mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's just, you know, that's one of a million modes of, you could say, cooperating with the intimacy of your own consciousness in a way that is experienced as harmful or harming. How do we expect as a species, whatever that suggests, to, you know, rise to the occasion of non-harming when inside the privacy of our own consciousness we're so fractured and ill at ease? It's a little, I don't know. It's kind of interesting to look at the candid structure and nature of consciousness. And that doesn't mean, you know, giving up or throwing your hands up and saying, ah, fuck it. It could mean that, of course, but let's just say that, you know, part of the maturing process, if there is a maturing process, is about, I don't know, grace under pressure, right? Seeing if we can discover a quality of grace under pressure. And by, you know, not signing up to the familiar nature of belief systems that accompany our own inner dialogue, our own self-deprecating or narcissistic or, you know, egomaniacal nature. All of the anger and all of the rage and all of the disappointment and all of the compensatory mechanisms that we subscribe to for, you know, some weird form of self-preservation or failed attempts at reparenting.
Well, what did I say? You can't always get what you want, but sometimes you get what you need. So.
Get what you need, yeah. That's right. Can't always get what you want.
You can't always get reparented, but maybe you get a little something.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Why not just, you know, aim for a little something? Well, if there is a window into something that might be referred to as transcendence, you know, if we're going to take Joseph Goldstein and Sam Harris at their word, which doesn't amount to much, of course, but you could say there's the possibility of understanding. Transcendence may be too lofty, right? There might be the possibility of the cessation or mitigation of suffering. Who knows? Your life, whatever life is too strange, whatever strange is, to, you know, to insist on anything. Flux. What do you have? Flux. That's all you got.
A whole lot of flux.
Just a whole lot of flux. There's a whole lot of flux going on.
Flux capacitor.
Flux capacitor. Exactly right.
I could be wrong, but I think that I think sometimes what we confuse with this receiving of grace is that we think that it's something that we can receive or attain through perseverance and fortitude. And
sure,
I sense it's got nothing to do with that.
Yeah, pretty much not a thing to do with it. I mean, perseverance and fortitude are just words that you use to observe the fact that you're still here. It's not like anyone can actually express or will perseverance or fortitude. If you're still here, you could say someone could accuse you of having perseverance and fortitude. But if you're still here, someone could also accuse you of having given up. I can't say anything real about the curious nature of still being here. Yeah, really. Well, what do you attribute to your still being here? Well, I sure as shit don't eat right, so it can't be that. You know? I don't know. Does masturbation help you live longer or the opposite? I don't know. What should I attribute to my still being here? Perseverance, earnestness, total failure? You know?
The heart is still beating.
Yeah, the heart's still beating. You know, it didn't ask me for permission. I mean, it's not like I'm trying to deliberately kill it, but I'm certainly not taking very good care of it. You know, fucking chemtrails and wheat. I'm dead where I stand. Yeah, I mean, you know, all of spirituality, I know, of course, I speak in, you know, loathsome generalities, but I don't know what else to say about anything except by making grandiose statements about nothing at all. But all of spirituality, you know, is the child of the myth of becoming. Without the myth of becoming, what the hell does spirituality mean? How about nothing? And you could say that is that's what we go through on the way to exhausting the entirety of myth. I mean, if enlightenment is real, or transcendence is real, if the cessation of suffering is real, if it's real, and you know, where do we go to find out? I mean, Sam Harris doesn't know dick about it. Joseph Goldstein doesn't know anything about it. I mean, they can tell you a bunch of stuff, but it's not like they know anything about it. I mean, does Peter Brown know anything about it? Who knows? He might say, sure. He might say, no way. But right here, wherever right here is, or right now, were there one? If you find yourself interested in becoming, which is the appetite or anticipation of an idealized quality of experiencing, then you're in samsara. And the cessation of samsara is obviously has nothing to do with perseverance or earnestness or anything like that. The cessation of samsara might be construed as the cessation of becoming right about now. Why do we need all of this Buddhism, all of this Hinduism, all of this Christianity, all of this Judaism, all of this Islamic belief? Why do we need Baha'i? Why do we need Nam-myoho Renge Kyo? They're all myth. They're all myth. They have nothing to do with anything. They're a self-perpetuating myth based on superstitious dramatizations of something that never even occurred. And I'm not a Jesus denier or a Holocaust denier or anything. I don't mean it never occurred in that way. It never occurred, meaning it has absolutely no relevance to the no relevance to what? Well, how about the glorious presentation of this moment now? So not only does becoming have an opportunity to abate, but all superstitious loyalty to anything that happened prior to this moment is also absolutely open and available for total cessation. But the reason we get, you know, bungled when it comes to, let's say, you know, spiritual idealism, or in the case of Trungpa, spiritual materialism, is because we still are under the spell of becoming, or some kind of loyalty, superstitious loyalty, which is no different than becoming, right? Really. That's what's incarcerating. The myth of becoming and the myth of all superstition, which includes presuming we know what consciousness is or where it's going or why it's here or what's in it for the likes of me. And all of that suggests the appearance of an identification or an incarceration, which is not actually so. Because continuity is unreal. Even though so much evidence suggests that it's absolutely real. Continuity is unreal. It's imagined. And if we begin to look at, or let's say sense, what is appearing as present reality, and that's a tall order because who knows what that is, we can begin to get a sense of the release and relief from superstition and becoming.
Yeah. I don't know whether this is true. I don't know whether this is true, but I have a sense that the purpose of continuity could possibly be just self-preservation.
Well, it can't be, because there's no self and there's no preservation. And continuity, you know, the miracle of the appearance of continuity does not have a purpose. Nothing has a purpose. Except for the, you could say, you know, the grand purpose of the entirety of phenomenal expression. But it's not like there's anything here sufficiently individuated to have a purpose or an agenda. Right? So we can't point to anything in human behavior and say, oh, that's because. Because, you know, I mean, you can do it, of course. You can accuse anyone and anything of being the reason or the consequence of anyone or anything. Knock yourself out. But, you know, it's just, it's imagined. Yeah. And, I mean, even if we play with the notion of survivability, well, that's not working. Everyone that's been born is dead except for the local, you know, 7-point-something billion that aren't dead yet. But prior to whatever, however many of us still remain through perseverance and earnestness, everyone else is dead. And we will soon be as well. So I don't know if something's trying to contribute to survivability, it sure isn't working.
Are you also suggesting that the answer to the question, why are we here, is that you're not?
Why not? That's as good an answer as having some other answer. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, we're not. It's a question, isn't it kind of a curious question of identity? It's a curious question of having an unsolicited or involuntary loyalty to the myth of consciousness itself. Which says, oh yeah, there's consciousness, there's experiencing, there's light, there's sound, there's taste, there's touch, right? There's smell, there's thinking. And so therefore, you know, there's existence. And the reason for this existence is whatever Stephen Hawking says. Hey, look, I'm just happy if I'm regular, you know, on any given day. I'm not going after, you know, some kind of Big Bang cosmology. You know? I'm simple. I'm just happy there's no blood in my stool. Stephen Hawking apparently has better things to think about. So must Sam Harris. You know, he's got better things to think about than, boy, there's no blood in my stool today.
Well, let's we go don't to know.
Yeah,
Stephen Hawking might be thinking that too.
He could be, yeah. He doesn't write frequently enough to me, so I wouldn't know. I mean, the remarkable prowess of imagination is, you know, it really should be sufficient for us to enlighten in an instant. You know? Just a simple appreciation of the miracle of imagination, you'd think would be sufficient for us to awaken where we stand. But it's funny, we don't typically awaken through the observation of our own imagination. Instead of awakening by virtue of glimpsing into our own imagination, we complain. We take the very evidence that should be more than sufficient for spontaneous enlightenment and turn it into the reason for unmitigated complaint. I mean, you know, good luck. Good luck. And how that works, beats me. But you can check it out, let's say, in your own consciousness. There's no place else to go or worth going. You can check it out in your own consciousness and look at the spontaneous and impersonal arising of, you know, metaphor and universe creation and the presumption of self, the miracle of imagination and continuity, and the cacophony of sensation that you, you know, arguably are presently enjoying, and see how this myth machine converts with no money down into complaint. After a while, you'd think we'd get kind of tired of it, but we don't. We take complaint all the way to the grave. As the principal defining superstition of the meritorious wisdom of our own existence. We're framed by complaint. I mean, maybe not someone as cool as, you know, Baryshnikov. You know, I mean, a guy like that. You know.
He doesn't complain?
I don't think so.
Terrible arthritis.
Well, it's possible, you know. Again, you know, I wrote to him the other day, copied Stephen Hawking, and neither one of them replied. and I blind copied Jeb Bush, and you know, he didn't have anything to say.
Let us know if you get an answer.
I will. Most people I write to simply say, take me off your mailing list.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I'm well liked. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you're not speaking their language, I guess. That's why.
Maybe not. I should take a course. Landmark. I'll do a landmark or a LifeSpring course and I'll finally figure out how to speak to people.
Didn't you ever clockwork? Yes. It didn't work in that movie either.
Clockwork Orange?
Yeah.
No, it didn't work. It didn't work.
Yeah.
No. I mean, it was Clockwork Orange was so much fun because he was such a violent asshole, and yet the movie, you know, permitted us to identify with him as the victim. And we were happy once he was relieved from the conditioning and went back out to the streets to create violence again, you know? It was like, thank God he's himself. I mean, Stan Kubrick did a really, really nice job on a weird kind of reverse empathy. Yeah. Because we were like so happy when he finally went back to being violent. Right? At the end of the film. At least that's the way I'm remembering it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was so happy to see him in a Star Trek movie. Right?
McDowell?
Yeah, Rodney McDowell, right?
Oh, Malcolm.
Sorry, Malcolm McDowell. Yeah, Malcolm McDowell, right? Malcolm, yeah. Yeah, he was, you know, he was a villain in one of those Star Trek films. I was like, yeah. Good casting. someone wrote to me on the Facebook page today, you know, a message. Because he had, this gentleman was thinking of kind of enrolling in a Waking Down and Mutuality course of some kind. And so he went trolling on the internet to see if he could find something that might have, you know, been contrary, let's say, to the success rate of the Waking Down and Mutuality cult to assist people in becoming enlightened. So, of course, he found some Facebook posts that I wrote, which was a little bit tongue-in-cheek. So he wrote to me saying, you know, who are you? What's your experience? You know, is it just a bunch of sour grapes on your part? You know, blah, blah, blah. So I said, hey, thanks for writing. And more or less wished him luck. I said, I don't know what to say to you. You know, I don't know what your karma is. We don't know each other well enough for me to tell you or suggest why you might benefit from participating in Samuel Bonder's cult, or whether it would be wise for you to stay away from it. Because I don't, you know, I don't know where you are on the sine wave of your own discovery process, right? I mean, I would like to presume that anyone that says, hey, I'd like to be enlightened someday is ready for, you know, a Zog Chen enema. But that's clearly not the case, is it? I mean, you can't go to Insight Meditation Society and, you know, suggest everyone have a Zog Chen enema because they'll run you out of town. A Yoga of Radiant Presence suppository. Because reality is not really all that friendly to this, you know, notion we were speaking of earlier of the failed or misguided attempt at reparenting. And if we're still in a certain phase of our own development where some kind of sobriety, you know, we're seeking some kind of sobriety to reparent or occupy ourselves in some kind of adulthood that looks a little less than rampant codependence. Right? So basically, whatever stage we're in, you have to kind of attend to that. Right? We've all seen people or had our own firsthand experience of thinking that some kind of aspiration in a Buddhistic manner or spiritual manner or contemplative manner would be useful to help me mitigate suffering, when the suffering is really about, you know, the failure of childhood development, which is epidemic. And so spirituality turns out not to really address the crisis of the failure of early child development. But that could take a few decades to figure out, right? As we bounce from one community to the next, and one guru to the next, and one bodywork cult to the next, matrix energetics and zero balancing and, you know, reconnection and ACIM, and we bounce all over the place trying to get some fundamental needs met. We don't even understand what those needs are or why we might seek to heal them. But we think that, you know, if I sit Zazen, I'm good to go. And then you just turn, what you end up seeing is a bunch of really fucking crazy narcissists touting the, right, spirituality du jour, becoming mucky mucks within the cult that they've, you know, decided to join. It's very depressing, actually, but it's kind of comical. Yeah. I mean, it's clear that, you know, Sam Harris could use a binky. I think all of this stuff that he portrays, you know, as a well-studied PhD and adult, you know, in terms of, you know, the land of opinion, of opinion, it, like, if he would just drop all that and suck on a binky for a month, I think he'd be much better off. Sam, it's really about nipple refusal, and if you would just go binky, I think you'd ultimately be much more happy. You could probably say the same thing for Richard Dawkins, you know, or the people that are in these, you know, bizarre camps of denial and materialism. It's interesting just to, you know, kick things around for fun without having any particular agenda or any particular deliverable as a vehicle for just kind of erasing whatever purposefulness you think you might be suffering from. It's the purposefulness which is so condemning. If we would just leave this alone, which is kind of an interesting yoga. I mean, just leave it alone. I mean, here this is. It has no purpose, including all the purposes that you insist that it has. And, wow, what is it? How profoundly your own experience reveals itself to itself in your intimate company when you just leave it alone. You just withdraw from purpose. Purposefulness, or you withdraw from seeking, having to deliver. It's really nice. There's a certain kind of, playful and mirthful dignity, which is what your experience is actually made of, which comes to the foreground as we, you could say, experiment with just leaving ourselves alone. If you want to do breath meditation, you know, do breath meditation. You want to apply yourself to, you know, exotic yogic demonstrations, you know, rock and roll, knock yourself out. But it's that fun kind of full circle revelation where are you going, right? After you've become, one has become accomplished as something or other and expresses all of their lofty opinions over the, you know, the course of decades and makes perhaps, you know, $60,000 in honorariums to speak at a university. You know, where are you going? Being relieved of myth. Just where you are, just now, just here, being relieved of myth is awake. And what's fun is you don't even have to apply your mind to it because your mind's going to lie to you anyway. It doesn't have a choice. Your mind is not capable of telling you the truth. It never was. You know, pardon me for saying so, and I mean this for all of us, but grow up. Your mind is not capable of telling you the truth. It's never been capable of that, and it never will be. Well, just because you have a succubus living inside you that would rather see you dead or alive is not really your problem. Then the yoga is just leave yourself the fuck alone. Because mind is just an apparitional, shh, quiet, I'm talking here. Beth watches Dancing with the Stars with her headphones, and she's commenting on everything that's going on out loud. she's really spiritual. Here she comes. Here she comes. Watch out. Here she comes. Oh, here comes the bird. She's flipping me the bird. This is what I have to contend with. I'm trying to accomplish something here, and she's just blurting shit out about Dancing with the Stars.
Well, hopefully she's feeling better today.
Yeah, it's a very spiritual household I live in. Free Cell and Hulu, that's pretty much all we do. I'm sure Byron Katie has a much more interesting life.
Does she ever watch Dating Naked? That's a funny show.
She will once I mention it to her.
It's dumb but entertaining.
If it's naked, it's good.
They make people go out on these blind dates without any clothes, and they make them do these really like crazy things naked, and they blur out their bodies. But
oh yeah. Well, actually, when I go outdoors, I like to blur out my body. It's, you could say it's kind of counterintuitive to experiment with the possibility that your present experience doesn't amount to anything. Not about anything. It does not actually reveal to you the course or nature of your life. The course and nature of your life is completely mythological. And so if I'm trying to use spirituality as a hook to make my life relevant in some idealized spiritual fashion, I'm dead in the water. So the remedy is not to go to Insight Meditation Society and learn how to do Vipassana. I mean, that's trivial. Though it may take up some amount of our, lifetime to become a skilled and senior practitioner, worthy of being interviewed by Sam Harris. Who could use a binky?
Great.
I mean, you can't tell your fastly growing, ravenous, anxious teenager to just get over themselves. I mean, because, they're kind of charmingly and maddeningly self-consumed. Which is a strategy or stage of, so-called human development that we're not obviously not going to eradicate. Not through pizza, not through beer, not through marijuana. Maybe at some point as an adult, if that's even possible, to occupy our lives as an adult, and I see so little evidence of it, especially in myself. Maybe we learn just to leave ourselves alone. And reality is more than happy to... Say again?
Oh, just leave our stunted development alone.
Well, yeah, that's right. Leave our stunted development to go alone, and you know, and leave our insatiable appetite for trying to unstunt alone. Everybody's wearing an ankle bracelet. Everyone is on a day pass from the halfway house. You could say it's rare or unusual that we can somehow occupy our present experience without such contention, without such neglect or psychic pressure. Without placing, you know, demands upon ourselves to occupy our present experience in some kind of idealized manner, exemplified by someone as silly as Ramana Maharshi. You know, once you get into the Brahman revering business, which is wonderful, actually. But once you get into the Brahman revering business, then your attention ends up, right, externalized. And then it becomes a cover for one's own, you know, neurotic self-loathing tendencies. And you wonder, you know, how well Ramana can actually help you, especially some number of decades after his death. I don't know. We don't trust our present experience. We have very little affection for our present experience. We run roughshod over the miraculous sensitivity of our present experience by returning again and again and again to the myth of mind. Drives us nuts. And then we try to resolve this self-antagonizing neurosis by resolving things within the field of mind. And then we hate ourselves even more because it doesn't work. Yikes. What a buzzkill. I invited the Waking Down guy to join us on the conference call this evening.
Mm.
Well, I don't think he showed up. Is that
maybe
lovely,
he'll listen to a record.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, in this spiritual culture that we're so brainwashed in, we're always on the lookout for the enlightenment story of the so-called speaker. You know, it's like, well, why should I listen to you? You're just a dumb fuck asshole. Tell me what your experience is. You know, tell me about your enlightenment experience so I can kind of vet you through my own filters. And it's like, I don't know. I got nothing, dude. I got nothing. Nothing. I got nothing. Nothing happened to me. Nothing is happening to me now. I can't frame my present experience with any confidence whatsoever. How about you? I mean, is that a good enough enlightenment story? Not typically, right? It's not. We don't trust it. We think like, no. Tell me about your epiphany. Tell me about your guru. Tell me about your dark night of the soul. Tell me about your collapse. Tell me about, you know, the blue pearl. Right? Convince me that you've had an enlightenment experience so that I can either, you know, pay you any attention or hate you even more. And you're like, well, what are you talking about? I mean, how about this being so remarkably empty of any vector or agenda that I don't even have the words to suggest how free this is. And it certainly isn't about me. It sure as shit isn't anything about what I've experienced or accomplished or done. I haven't done anything. I haven't accomplished anything. No experience has actually ever occurred to me for me to say, oh, this happened, and, you know, that's the reason why you should, you know, give me 5 minutes of your time. That's a little too strange because of the culture of, you know, celebrity creation. And so that drives us insane because we want to realize, if we want to realize, whatever that suggests, through the filter of the celebrities that have come before us about whom books have been written or, you know, they wrote shit themselves. So we think, oh, that's the measure. That's the barometer. That's the guarantee of something that's kicked around as enlightenment. And guess what? It might not be.
It's just marketing.
It is all a form of marketing. I mean, what was Nirsagadatta's actual experience? And just because he got up and ranted and raved and flung his arms around and yelled at people and threw them out and talked about the absolute, it doesn't really tell you much about him, does it? I mean, as demonstrative as he was, it doesn't tell you much about him, does it? You could argue it doesn't tell you anything about him. Even his teachings, written or otherwise, and even the way that they impact you if you've been a student of it and you've had, let's say, some interesting spiritual experiences by exposing yourself to those teachings. What does it tell you about Nirsagadatta? Well, I would argue not a goddamn thing. More interesting than that, no matter what interesting experiences you may have had, are having, or will have, doesn't tell you anything about yourself either. That's even weirder. Nothing tells you anything about yourself. No spiritual experience, no accomplishment, no penetration of the Dharmakaya tells you anything about yourself. Because all referential and representational experience is myth. And yet those are the barometers or the measurement sticks, you know, the yardsticks that we use to convince ourselves that someone else is enlightened or that we are well on our way to being enlightened also. And this is all imaginary. Like I said, the moment you turn to mind what do cops have, you know? What do cops call each other? Their partner, right? My partner, you know, when they cruise around in a squad car, the cop has a partner, right? And so the moment you turn to your partner to tell you what's real, you know you've failed. You know all you're going to get is, you know, some kind of heresy. hearsay or heresy, if that's the same or different, who cares? So you see what happens? We reflexively, impulsively turn to mind to tell us how we're doing. And mind can only do one thing, which is lie to you. Not because it means you any, you know, ill will, but it can't do anything other than lie because it is just an artifact of referential fantasy. Is that bizarre? Everything that's appearing in your experience right now, as irrefutable as you may point to it, amounts to what? Nothing. It's referential fantasy. It could even be reverential fantasy, but it's still fantasy. So when you self-accuse as being unenlightened or suffering or one thing or another, that's not true. And then if you pat yourself on the back because you've had a nominal spiritual experience, duh, that's not true either. If you get stoned because you're sitting on the toilet, you know, and you've read a good Nirsagadatta passage, that's not true.
But it feels good.
It does. There's no question about it. Are you kidding? There's nothing like evacuation and Nirsagadatta. It's like perfect together. Yeah. You know, when I go see
that guy, he's really...
Say again?
If the guy listens to the recording, he's going to really realize how enlightened you are.
He might, yeah. Or he would be best to avoid me at all costs forever. You know, whenever I go see my therapist, you know, I just, you know, I try to start the session off with, yeah, I had a great evacuation and I read a really pithy Nirsagadatta quote. And that usually gets us into, you know, some more personal material about myself. And every once in a while, I'll comment on something Wayne Lickerman wrote while I'm peeing. That's another great combination. Uh-huh. Oh. You know, if I'm smoking crack and reading, you know, some Alan Watts. No, that's a good day.
Yeah, that's a good combination.
That's a really good combination. Crack cocaine and Alan Watts. Doesn't get any better than that.
No.
Yeah.
Especially that accent.
I know. That's a great accent. Yeah, I brought a copy of I Am That with me last time I went camping. Then I ran out of toilet paper. Guess what I did?
You got enough pages to last you about a week.
Yeah, I was out in the woods for a month. I went through the whole book. Yeah, I'd read a page and then I'd wipe my ass with it. Yeah, when I came home, a friend of mine said, "Hey, where's my copy of I Am That?" I went, "Oops."
I'm going to send you another copy.
No, please don't. I'll have to take laxatives. It's startlingly curious just how, you know, elastic and malleable and easy to befuddle the sense of self is. You know, so it's like you have to turn out to be the best magician you know. You, the one that has to turn out to be the best shaman that you know, because it's kind of up to you to replace certainty with hilarity, to replace, you know, some kind of egoic enterprise like self-deprecation or whatever it is we may be, you know, jonesing on with hilarity. No one else can really do it for you, though we can, of course, get together and have a good giggle.
Who's that gazer guy? The guy who gazes at everyone?
Oh, there's a couple of gazers. Brazzo?
Yeah, Brazzo.
Is that who you mean? The healer? Brazzo the healer?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just stands in the wind and everyone gazes at him. I guess he's still going strong. I don't know. What the hell's up with Buddha Boy? I don't know.
Who's Buddha Boy?
I don't know, the little kid that sat under a tree without eating or peeing or something and then started speaking and selling ahimsa. I mean, the whole of creation, as if there were one, is just, you know, teeming with disobedience. Reality is... if you had to say, well, what's the one single accoutrement or, reflective expression of reality, you would say, oh, just disobedience. And anarchistically, it's an anarchistic beatitude.
Do you mean chaos?
Sure, yeah. Every moment is a miracle of absolute dissolution. You could say everything that's appearing has no real business being there, but try to shake it off. And if that applies to your own consciousness, then it's even stranger, right? It's like, oh, okay, so there's experiencing. Mm-hmm. And maybe consciousness has something to do with it, maybe not. But this experiencing, you could say, has no business being here, but try to shake it off. Why go on and on about Dzogchen or Vipassana or anything, since they're all just myth? There's no actual conveyance that could possibly result from the practice of any of these skill sets. Unless one is interested in becoming a narcissistic purveyor of refinement. And so what? Mm-hmm. being a narcissistic purveyor of refinement amounts to what exactly? Not much. We're immersed in magic with no actual conveyance. The miracle of profusion and consciousness relieved of any clinging. The miracle of consciousness and profusion relieved of any clinging doesn't satisfactorily convey a creature who therefore must become enlightened. Yeah, I mean, I sent out a flyer today to some gal who teaches yoga in the local community, and, you know, she's all about bliss and this and that, and I'm like, well, hey, you know, here, three awakened teachers are coming to the neighborhood for you to hang out with. And all she could say was, you know, unsubscribe me. Okay. You know, all right. Some other guy I know that, kind of sells himself as an awakened teacher, you know, in the local community. I sent him a flyer and said, hey, you know, been a while. Why don't you come and hang out? And he was like, I don't work with teachers anymore. And I said, dude, I didn't invite you because you need to work with teachers. I invited you because it's, you know, it's a blast. It's a social time. You know, no one thinks any less of you because you've come to hang out and participate in Paul Hederman's rapturous presence, right? I don't work with teachers anymore. I said, are you fucking crazy? What kind of reply is that? You're so self-important that, you know, to even reply that way is like, what are you trying to prove? I mean, life is a blast. Why don't you come out, you know, come on in the water, right? Let's play Marco Polo.
Isn't that water polo?
Yeah, not really. Marco Polo. Marco Polo. So, I don't know. What can I say? There's so much fun to be had, and so much, you know, generosity of spirit and so much affection and, you know, the conveyance of sacred presence to be had. And for people to reject that gift out of hand, what can I say? It boggles my mind, you know? But okay, this self-obscures. That's what it does best. Mm-hmm. That's that.
Well, if there is anybody listening to...
Sorry to cut you off.
Okay.
This is how we close the Tuesday night Night Sky Sangha video conference. You got a few minutes to dance before drinking yourself to sleep. Thank you, Dr. John. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye. You bet.